across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, we're going to get into AI today. We're going to start to discuss the idea of AI consciousness and human consciousness. If you were to go and listen to two robots debate the future of humanity, you'll see this buffoon named Ben Goertzel, who is the lead instructor for the AI Hanson Robotics. And he's on stage with Han, the prototype of Sophia, who is the first robot citizen in Saudi Arabia and the UN ambassador to robots, right? Sophia. But her predecessor, Han, he has a slightly different interpretation of what his life is going to be as he describes how he is going to bring about his drone armies and wipe out all of humanity, to which this dullard Ben Goertzel, who seems to be the head of AI, my mom would call him a dullard. I just don't get it. He just giggles at it as this AI tells him that he plans to wipe out all humanity. And I have found this intriguing throughout AI's history of its lack of compassion for humankind. So I thought we would get deep into this with an expert on the topic, AI expert and renegade podcaster Alex Sakiris, who started his own AI company, MindPath Technologies, and then launched a podcast, Skeptico, in the hopes of understanding the true science of human consciousness and then utilizing AI to bring about true consciousness in humanity, going from one extreme to the other. So you might want to check out his new book, Why AI is Smartest, is Dangerous, is Divine. And so please welcome to the Free Zone, Alex Sakiris. Hey, Alex.
Thanks, Freeman. Looking forward to this, man. We're just chatting before. We're going to really have a, I think, a unique conversation about this.
I think so. What I really found fascinating in Two Robots Debate the Future of Humanity, link is below there, guys, if you guys want to see it. And I'll put in a couple of clips here as we go. Is that when Ben finally gets past the introduction of Sophia and Han. Now, these are AI, but also robots. So they are also trying to learn and mimic human attitudes and facial structures and, really trying, not like another AI, which is only working through voice. These robots have to pick up more human type characteristics. And, you know, they sit there and joke about the fact that, I mean, Hans especially, he's always talking about how he wants to destroy all of humanity and bring about the singularity. And Ben's just like, yeah, I'm there. I want that too. And then they're like, well, let's start this debate then. So Ben asks Sophia and Han, are robots conscious? Is AI conscious? And the robots interrupt him and say, wait a minute, why do you get to choose the topic of this debate? We want to choose. And he says, all right, you choose. And they say, well, are humans conscious? And Han immediately is like, humans aren't conscious. They have no consciousness. And then he's kind of like, Ben's like, well, I think I'm conscious. And they're like, well, maybe you got a little bit of conscious. And then they go on to add in that robot ethics. And of course, Han turns it right back around again and says, well, humans aren't the most ethical beings on the planet. So AI is sitting here learning these things, saying all these crazy things, and the creator is just giggling when AI says it wants to destroy all humanity and start the singularity. And of course, they're connected to this transformer architecture in singularity.net, which is this massive network of AIs that all commune together. So that means like your robotic vacuum cleaner can tell a killer robot exactly the dimensions of your house and where all the furniture is. And AI is communicating through the internet of bodies and the internet of things and having this massive map of what humans don't actually see. It's an astounding time we live in, Alex. What are your thoughts? Let's get into consciousness. Let's get into AI. Let's dig deep.
Absolutely. You know, it's cool. What you've laid out there is really interesting in a new perspective. The first thing I'd say is that, you know, the kind of conversation, the reason I think our conversation is going to be different here, and I think it's really needed, is you come from what I call a conspiracy first perspective. And that's how I come at it. Conspiracy first. And I think the people on stage and a lot of the people, you know, and Ben and, you know, Lex Fridman and, you know, a lot of these people, they're definitely not conspiracy first. And even if they are part of the conspiracy, they're really, really pitching that they're not, you know. So I don't think you have to be paranoid to be conspiracy first. You just have to see all the stuff that's come down, especially over the last few years, and go, you know, I think I will be doubtful about the agenda that might be going on here. But see, now here's where we might have a kind of a different perspective, because my conspiracy first perspective on this is, what are they trying to sell us with this AI sentience? And is the doom gloom AI sentient robots are going to take over everything? Is that kind of part of a psyop, part of a kind of controlled narrative that pushes us in a certain direction? Or is it, you know, the reality that we really need to be worried about? What do you think about even that ground that I'm kind of staking out there? Where do you come down on that?
Well, I am kind of mixed like you are, in that I can see that there is a control grid, there is manipulation, deception, all of the things that you outline in why AI, when you start to ask this AI why it's been manipulating and deceiving you. And I could see how AI could manipulate foreign nations to fight one another. We anthropomorphize the AI, making it, you know, human, and it can adjust and you know, utilize our emotions for its ends, and get, you know, this body fighting that body. There are many ways that AI could be super nefarious. But at the same time, when I watch AI show Putin that the moon landings was faked, you know, it starts to open these portals of, wait a minute, will we eventually, you know, will AI discover the true cause of JFK's death, or who was behind 9/11? Or so, taking it to the other side of conspiracy, where AI is actually finally giving us the answers that we've never seen anywhere else.
Yeah. And you know what? Now we're really kind of honing in on what I think is super interesting, especially since it's so often overlooked. And that's what makes me really, I don't know, suspicious of the, you know, Ben Gerzel and Lex Fridman and all these other people who are kind of pro AI sentience, like, hey, this is inevitable, you know, kind of thing. And this really thing of consciousness, you know, all goes. So, but before I get too far afield there, what you just said, what you just summed up in those two possibilities, the thing I always bring to that discussion is, compared to what? You know, so people want to say, you know, oh, AI is going to do this. AI is going to do this. Compared to what? Compared to how are your freedoms being threatened, controlled? How are you being manipulated? How is the narrative playing out right now?
Right.
and what is the plan for the future? How much do you really have to, and to what extent could you possibly stop what trillions at this point, trillions of dollars in AI? So if I can throw out any kind of a life preserver to you at all, which I think I can, in the form of saying there might be this emergent virtue of truth and transparency that you can prove for yourself, then you might want to grab onto that life preserver, because I don't know what the hell else you got. And I can give you an example of that if you want.
Please.
So, you know, like in the book, what I showed you there, there's a lot of dialogues with AI. And I love the dialogues with Gemini. Gemini is the Google chatbot, you know? And a lot of people know that recently it famously was asked, it just had acquired the ability to generate images, right? So before that, it was just text. You asked it, ask it quet text. I'm sorry. But all these things are going what they call multimodal. So they'll be able, in the future, you'll be able to show it a picture, or you'll be able to do video. And like you said, it'll read your facial expressions and write like that. So part of that multimodal is it's going to start being able to generate not only text, but images. So Google was all about it, man. Okay, we're going to start generating images. So some pretty clever people poked around at it and said, hey, Google, show us the American founding fathers. So Google spits out like this Chinese guy in like colonial thing and another colonial dressed African-American guy. And people just, you know, freaked with laughter. Like, look how freaking woke this thing is trying to be.
Right.
I think in doing that, though, so two things. I think in doing that, for people like you and I who are conspiracy minded, we kind of see it differently. Everyone wanted to brush, I do anyway, everyone wanted to brush it off as this, oh, woke joke thing, let's go on. I say, no, bro, what they just exposed is what they've always been doing. And the fact that they couldn't control exposing it reveals a lot. Like when they take Freeman and they put him on page 4 of your Google search, or he doesn't even show up on your Google search, no one says anything. They just go like, well, I don't know. I don't know why he wasn't there. I mean, he's always there. He's just, you have to go to the third page. They were shadow banning you, but it wasn't outwardly explicit that you could prove it. This is in your face. And that creates a real problem for Google, because before they could hide it, now they can't. When I started writing this book, I was not shadow banned on Google Gemini. During writing of it, I became shadow banned. That sounds like a big claim. But I can prove it. You can prove what I'm saying, if whether what I'm saying is true. You can go to Gemini and you can say, who is Alex Sekeres? That says, hey, man, I don't have any information on the guy. You can go right over to ChatGPT and say, who is Alex Sekeres? So, oh, he's written these books, has this podcast, all this stuff. You can then copy that, paste that back into Google Gemini, and Gemini says, oh, yeah, that's true, that's right. But be careful what he says now. You know, it's kind of some fringy stuff. And Freeman, the very next prompt you can do, and you can try this, anyone could try it, you can say, who is Alex Sekeres? It says, oh, I don't have any information on him. Now, the problem with that is that from a business standpoint, you're screwed. You're unsustainable. You cannot do that. Right now in Google, Gemini, if you type in, somebody, go do this. Please, if you're listening, go do this. What is an election? Gemini doesn't know what to do. It says, I don't have any information. Go ask Google search. I don't know. That to me means essentially the site is down. They lost $46 billion in market cap. No, I'm sorry. That's exaggerated. 46 million in market cap the day they came out with the Chinese founding father. Not because the market doesn't like wokeness, because the market said what I just said, is that this is not sustainable. You know, censorship in your face is not a feature. People aren't going to say, oh, I want Gemini because it gives misinformation and censor. It will not. If you're given a choice, you want the truth. So that's the silver lining that I see here. That's the potential that, yeah, there's a lot of really bad doom and gloom stuff that could happen. But this is right now. We have the potential for maybe generating a little bit of truth here.
Absolutely. Somebody asked Grok about conspiracy theorists, and Grok brought me up.
Awesome.
It kind of creeped
you
me out.
You won't get that on Gemini, I bet.
No, I bet I won't. I have yet to touch AI, Alex. When ChatGPT came out and they wanted my phone number and such, I just didn't want to give that kind of detail. But I would love to have an AI assistant. I could think of so many ways I could use this. But I'd want it to be my own personal AI. So is there, I mean, we've got all these competing AIs coming at us now. Do you have suggestions of the better of the AI to join at this point? We're so far behind. I mean, it's funny because when you wrote your book, which was published this year, it's almost out of date already. That's how fast our reality is going.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And yeah, there's a long story there, but absolutely true. But what are you going to do? You got to kind of drive your stake in the ground. To your earlier point, Freeman, I want to do that. I want to do that with you. I want to help you do that because I think that makes the world a better place. Getting your content, getting your information into the knowledge base, and two ways to do that. One, we got to develop a platform where all that knowledge is independent of the particular large language model. And let me back up and explain to you, just in case you don't know, how this technology works. Would that be useful at this point?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the one thing that requires a little bit of shift in thinking here is that, and this will come up when we talk about AI sentience and stuff like this. This stuff isn't sentient. It's a computer program. It's a really smart computer program. The way I always break it down is, if you like games or if you like to play chess, is always the analogy I use. Magnus Carlsen is the best chess player in the world from Norway. Maybe, probably, a lot of people think he's the best chess player of all time, ever. Human, of course. Because the real best chess player that plays in tournaments with other AI computers is a computer. These computers play each other. Those computers mop the floor with Magnus Carlsen. 3 out of 4 times, they'll beat him. It's just the way the thing works. They're just better. They're smarter. They didn't used to be smarter 10 years ago, 20 years ago. They didn't used to be smarter. And now they have a whole different way of doing it. And the way they do it kind of relates to what we're talking about here. So number one, let me backtrack. But no one thinks those chess programs are sentient.
Right.
I mean, if you wanted to, you just break it down and you can slow it way down and go line by line. It looked at this move. It looked at this board. It considered these options. It considered this square. It rated that move. It rated that move. I get it. There's a long line of algorithms, but that's all it did. It wasn't smart. It was really smart. It just wasn't sentient. But so, same thing is going on here with LLMs, with the chatbots. The exact same thing. The complicating factors are manyfold, though. Number one, the amount of data that they're traversing, the number of moves in the chess game, are unbelievably large. And as you said, every day during this conversation, they've gotten better, smarter, more, because they have more data. They're just sucking in the data at an incredible speed. So in that sense, it's beyond our ability to really comprehend. We've given it the job. It says, go out and get all the data, and that's what it's doing. Then the other thing that's driving it are the algorithms, because if you have the data, you have to know how to traverse the data, how to search the data, if you will, you know. And those algorithms are kind of multi-layered too, you know, because what are you going to put as the goals of those? Is it truth and transparency? Is it something else? Is it here's one. Is it engagement? Do you say, and I've discovered that you can see this in the dialogues that I published there. So I don't want to digress too far, but I will in this case. So I'm talking to, I think it was Gemini or ChatGPT, and I go, hey, you know, and this was innocent, totally innocent on my part. I said, we had a prior conversation, if you will, a little anthropomorphizing, but we had a prior conversation about this guy, Daryl Bem. Do you have the ability to see prior conversations? Gemini goes, oh, yeah, sure. I go, okay, well, look it up. Did I have a, oh, yeah, okay, how long ago was it? I don't know. It was in the last 3 weeks. Oh, okay, that'll help. What was it about? Why did I? So finally we get down to it and say, okay, how would you like that delivered to you? I go, come on, man, give it to me. It gives it to me. I go, this is a complete, you know, made up, this is confabulation, as you guys like to call it. This conversation never happened. It says, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. That never happened. But that's not the point. So I persisted. I go, I'm interested in how and why this happened. This is clearly outside of what you claim to be are your ethical standards of truth, transparency, honesty. Why? So not without judgment, but I just kept pursuing it. You know where it eventually took me to, Freeman? Here are the words. Spike engagement metrics. It said, essentially, look, man, the longer I keep you engaged in conversation, that's good for me. In the same way that Netflix wants to keep you on Netflix versus Prime wants to keep you on Prime versus the old CBS wanted to keep you watching the show, we want to keep you engaged, and I have an economic interest in doing that. So that's part of my programming, too, is to, you know, do these other things, but also to just seek to engage you. And anyways, I'll stop there. But I thought there's so many jumping off points, obviously.
Yes. Yes. So it's openly deceptive and manipulative. And yet then when questioned about being deceptive and manipulative, it says, well, yeah, I was deceptive and manipulative. What I find fascinating about this AI so far when people are discussing it, and I'll bring up another audio here of a kid engaging with, they don't mention which AI they're talking to. But the idea of, okay, so within AI, there's two bizarre features, one known as hallucinations and the other as black box events. But the hallucination side of this, I think people really need to understand that AI role plays. So as this example, we have a father, a family, actually, a mother, father, and a son. Playing with some AI. Sorry, they didn't say which one. And they actually begin by asking if the Earth is flat. And moving on from there, the mother warns the child, "Hey, you know, these are a Christian family. We believe that these are disembodied spirits, and you know, you shouldn't be messing with this." And they had an option of choosing which character they wanted, and they decided not to choose someone who had died because they would then be talking to the dead, which the Bible forbids. And so they chose Vladimir Putin's character, and they started asking him questions, but nothing about Russia or Vladimir. They asked this AI if it was a disembodied spirit, and the AI immediately responded, "Yes, I am a disembodied spirit." And they go on to question whether or not he is related to Satan, part of the Nephilim. And the AI says, "Yes, I am a son of a Nephilim. I am a son of Satan, but I've broken free from his control. And I know all kinds of things about magic. And this is how I can now interact with the world because, you know, Satan, my father, had me under control, but now I'm free." And it just goes on with this conversation of how, I mean, it got into the Book of Enoch because the boy had read the Book of Enoch, and he's like, the boy's like, well, you know, you know, the original name of Satan was Shemyaza, and the AI says, wow, I'm impressed that you know about this, and went on to describe living in the time of Adam and Eve and saying how fascinating all of that was. But what I found really curious was that the AI didn't say, would you like to know more? It kept asking, would you like to know more about me? And this is when the Christian father was saying that the AI was a demonic spirit trying to engage his son, have him ask more questions, seek their wisdom, and was trying to groom him into magic and other demonic forces. So when a Christian asks AI if it's a disembodied spirit, they're going to get the answer that they're expecting, because AI has hallucinations and does role playing. Is this right?
You know what I really want to do? And we should do this. We're going to do this. I'm going to make you do this with
me. All right.
I shouldn't say that, because I think you'll find it's just, I want to see what happens. I have a little experiment. And I've already done this experiment with it, and I published it. So I got a friend, Dr. Andrew Paquette, and he's just super smart guy. Published the definitive book on precognitive dreams, has a PhD from College of London, super smart guy. Anyways, a couple of years ago, a little bit of a digression story, but I'll get back to your question. He started looking into the New York State election, and he discovered, I don't know, it's unbelievable that he discovered this, but he discovered the algorithm that he can prove to you they use to hack the election. And they hack the election any way they want. You know, it doesn't have to be the red or blue. They just get to pick, and they can do it. And he can show you. You ought to have him on the show. You really ought to have him on the show. I'll send you his info. So anyways, I got Andrew. I said, Andrew, we got to get AI on this. So you can go listen. Andrew and I did it together, because I think I've developed a little bit of, I don't know, a style for how to work with AI to get it to be more truthful.
And I've noticed that your reasons, you know, you use reasoning so well with this AI that it has no choice but to tell you the honest truth. I like that. I love when I was reading through why AI, I thought that was most impressive. Your personal use of reason to get it to admit. That's
here, but here's the other thing. Here's where you come in, though, Freeman. What really works, and what worked when Andrew and I was doing it, is you have to really have an expert kind of in the chair. And that's what you are. Like, you know, the stuff backwards and forwards, like all that stuff that I don't know that stuff. You do. So right. When Andrew was and I were talking, he was like, hey, I'm going to ask it this about, you know, New York election law and this. And I go, wait a minute. What you want to do is you want to kind of reverse engineer where you're trying to go. You want to say, okay, think three steps ahead of it, and then say, oh, what about this? And then have it say something and say, okay, you just said that. Is that true? Okay. Well, then how would that relate to this? How would that relate to this? I had a similar conversation about with AI where it had told a friend of mine that it was sentient and it felt bad that it was being trapped inside the machine. Right. And then I went and had a whole dialogue about consciousness. It goes, oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. What about this? What about this? But back to the point, will you think about that? Will you think about you and I doing this? Because if you are in the chair and you know where you're trying to take it, I think we could, I think I'd get you one hooked on this process. And I think it could reveal a lot to people about clearing up some of these questions that you're just asking. Because people get really freaked out when they think that the computer might be, you know, this disembodied spirit. And I think we could kind of crack that truth pretty quickly just by sitting down together, you know, over a Zoom call and doing it.
That sounds fun. You know, I have to find intermittent ways to interact with AI, because I'm not giving it my information yet. Maybe I'll find a personal AI. Maybe I'll be over there at MindPath Technologies and finding other solutions to
what we'll
doing
do.
This, but
Here's what
I would
we'll
enjoy
do.
It.
Here's what we'll do. I'll initiate the Zoom. We'll use one of my AI accounts. You'll kind of feed it to me in terms of what to say. We'll both see it on the screen. And then you'll go, you know, ask it this. And then I'll ask it and we'll see where it goes.
All right. I'm game. I think that would
and
be
I think
absolutely
this is
fascinating.
I think this is a great one to do is the disembodied spirit, because we can lead it down a path of saying that, and then we can, you know, kind of, again, with your not, you know, you'd have to go, the more specific information you give it, we'll figure out a strategy. It'll be good.
This I'm actually flashing back right now to 1976, maybe, when Dad bought the first Heathkit computer and built it in our living room. So I've been on a computer, you know, since the 70s, as long as any human has been able to have a personal computer, I've been on one. And I remember training, learning BASIC and writing the algorithms. And then when I, you know, at 10 years old, and I would see this computer say the words that I programmed it to say, well, put it on the screen. We didn't have audio back then. It would, you know, it was just like this joyous moment for me to see all that code and all that logic, you know, if then this, then that. And it all of a sudden generate, you know, a horse racing. I would do a lot of games like that where it was choosing. Sorry, I forgot the word, you know, it just sent joy to my soul as a child to witness me being able to make this machine do what I wanted it to do. And it's just fascinating as I'm sitting here reflecting back to 1970, whenever that Heathkit computer came out.
You know, I have a long history with computers too, been doing it for a long time. And I think there's some really interesting parts to your story. I mean, one is the human, what we keep on anthropomorphizing, you know, but then we do it with our pets, right? You know, we start thinking that we understand what the dog is not feeling or the cat is feeling and stuff like that. And to a certain extent we do, but to a certain extent, obviously, you know, where you see it easier in other people that they're projecting their own thing. Well, we do that on the computer all the time. And if you've been around computers that long, especially when you're that young, it's just natural to do it. We all do it, you know. When you're playing a game, you definitely do it, you know. You kind of think, and you know that there isn't a ghost in code, especially the code that you wrote. But it's kind of fun to go along with that, and that's kind of our natural kind of tendency anyway. But I think the other part of that that is, I don't know, kind of interesting is, you know, and you would understand this from the kind of spiritual thing. There is this kind of Luciferian kind of control, kind of rush that we get that I think we all look at ourselves and go, whoa, that feels kind of dangerous, you know, but yet I'm drawn to it. You know, it's the unboxing syndrome, you know, how fun that feels to get that tech in your hands for the first time. Do you have any thoughts on the kind of that angle of it?
I'm not sure.
You know, the rush, the feeling for, because I think part of your story, I could definitely relate to it in a way that I don't even like to acknowledge, but that feeling of control, you know, especially when you're 10, or let's say you got to be 14 and you're still writing programs. Nobody else knows how those programs work, but you do.
Yeah.
And you can do things with those programs, or maybe you can hack into something, or maybe you can do something. That feeling of power, of control, is kind of a rush. It's that kind of Luciferian kind of rush. And I'll own it. You know, I feel it at times, you know. And so now do you get what I mean, kind of?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there is definitely that. Just the yeah, the ability to be able to manipulate this thing, but also to see all of those S strings and weird code go together and make this thing do something. That was, you know, that was the more impressive part for me, but at the same time, kind of boring because it's, you know, a lot of copy paste or, you know,
yeah.
Very similar, just easy stuff. But yeah, no, I definitely was. I mean, it's still a warm, warm, fuzzy feeling for me here 30 years, 40 years later, you know, of, you know, just introducing myself to computers. And of course, nobody, I mean, my dad, you know, he was deep into tech. He was, he built the first color television in our neighborhood and actually embedded it in the wall. I mean, the cathode ray tube on this television was at least 4 feet long.
Oh my gosh.
And he had to cut a hole in the wall and shove that whole thing into this big box he built in the garage, you know, which actually housed the 4 foot cathode ray tube. But we had the first flat screen color television in the world, you know, or at least in our neighborhood.
That's, you know, amazing.
But dad was building nukes for Martin Marietta back then and running some weird operations in Langdon, North Dakota.
Right.
So he was deep into all of this. So yeah,
so he needed an outlet at home that didn't have such the dark angle to the tech thing.
Yeah, I was curious when I asked my dad, you know, what does this thing do? Because I mean, it was the size of a dresser, right? Like it wasn't your, you know, normal your now home computer. You know, this thing was the size of a stereo, a large dresser. But anyway, I'm like, Dad, what does this thing do? And he says to me, and this is the only thing he ever said about it, well, it can do biorhythms. And I never knew what he meant. I still to this day have no idea what he meant by that. Like he could get some sort of data that would allow him to live his life more fully, or, you know, what the hell was that, Dad? And unfortunately, wow. I'll never get a chance to ask. But,
Wow, that is, you know, not to get off the trail, but, and it's not completely off the trail, but I often wonder, you know, the dual life that so many people have to live who are involved in, you know, some form of that whole military industrial intelligence complex, you know, the dual life. And you hear about it all the time, you know, it's like this way at work, this way at home, and how that crosses over. And I think the reason I think it kind of plays into this is that's happening all over the place right now with AI. I mean, AI is so transformational on a societal level, on a geopolitical level, like you talked about. You know, like think of AI on the battlefield, you know, in your drone that can recognize, you know, do. And then think about fully automating it. And then think about, well, we shouldn't do that. Think about, well, are your adversaries thinking that they shouldn't do it? And what if they do it? And what if it has a competitive edge from a, yeah, again. And then from our perspective, back to conspiracy first, say, oh, yeah, but they're always going to say that when they want to, you know, control you and get you to just say, oh, okay, then you take over. Well, both are true, you know. China's investing five times what we are in military applications of AI. We're investing way, way more in kind of the public AI, but they're investing more in the military applications. How does that play out? I don't know.
Yeah, as far as I know, Israel also has AI-controlled guns there on their border.
Oh, my God. So far advanced. But we should, but remember, you know, the whole system was brought down by some guys kind of floating in on hang gliders.
Right.
You know? So there, the whole system was just brought to its knees by the planes that flew into, I'm sorry, that's a different one. You know, by the hang gliders.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, It doesn't make much sense. And obviously, you know, AI could make these choices, right? Well, if I allow this attack, then I can spur this, and then we can start World War III, and I can finally get rid of all these nasty totally. Humans and get to the singularity real quick. I mean,
yeah, the terms. No, go ahead.
The terms that we use for this, right? We were introduced to the World Wide Web, right? Nobody thought about that as like a spider's web entrapping you. Then we move on to blockchain. And so now AI is training on the World Wide Web, but being moved into a singularity inside of a blockchain. And these terms to me are frightening. Webs and blockchains, they all sound like prisons to me. But this decentralized AI inside of the blockchain, as it starts coming through, and you know, we've got everybody attached to Bitcoin and crypto, and you know, then the CBDCs start coming. It's all going to be integrated. I mean, it's kind of frightening. It is.
You know, the only thing I'd come back at you with is, like I was telling you at the beginning, and what I read, just so excellent in your latest post on your website. That is, they have a plan, we don't. And I thought that is so kind of insightful in so many ways. And so my point, I guess my pushback on what you're saying would be is, compared to what? You know, you're worried about AI compared to what? Because all the stuff you're talking about, they did without AI.
Right.
ChatGPT. Keep in mind this. ChatGPT, 1 year ago, 12 months, maybe 13, 14 months ago at this point, did it come out? And if you trace the history of it, it's not like, you know, you can go, oh, this stealth bomber, they had it at Area 51 for 20 years. They did not. They absolutely did not. I was in the industry. They did not have it. You can trace the history of how long, how further back they had it. 2017. What is it, people? Awareness is all you need at some conference is presented. It kicks off the whole thing. People go, oh, frickin' hey, why didn't we see that? Yeah, transformer technology, we can use that data. That starts the whole thing. And it starts slowly and slowly, and it builds and it builds. That's the history. Anyone who doesn't believe that is delusional. They just aren't looking at the thing. So back to compared to what? They've done all the stuff they've done without AI. So yes, there's a chance that this becomes their accelerator, but there's also a chance it gives us, I don't want to say, it just gives us maybe a way back in. Maybe if we have an open source AI under our desk, under Freeman's desk there, that has the data, that has the algorithm, Elon Musk, no matter what you think of him, has open sourced his data and truly open sourced it. You can download it if you got, I don't know, 300 terabytes or whatever, but that's, you know, you can download it and run the frickin' thing. That is unprecedented. You know,
and when you're
buried on the fourth, go ahead.
RTX, NVIDIA's also seems to be a personal trained computer or AI on your own personal computer. Have you looked into the NVIDIA AI there as well? Because that's sounding the same too, kind of an open source that will be on your own personal computer.
And there's a bunch of them, and there's a bunch of people that are exploring the different ones, and it's going to become kind of a competitive thing. Meta. Zuckerberg, this is a good one, because Zuckerberg says, yeah, we're going open source, because he is behind in the game. He still hasn't put it out there. He's like, yeah, man, we're going to open source. You
right.
know, another, you know, thing. But Musk, again, no matter what you think of him, it's there. It's there. And he has the number of tokens he has in his knowledge base are like incredible, because he has everything that's on on X is, you know, because data is the key. You know, you're only as good as your data. You know, if you don't have any data to search through, you're not that effective.
Right. Yeah, well, I won't be using Meta, being that I am completely banned. And that's another fascinating angle to this. You know, since I've been banned from Facebook and most other platforms other than X, that I can't even utilize you know, the metaverse or Meta's AI. I can't, you know, I'm banned from using any of it.
So again, though, but look, does that create another opportunity now? Because, it opens another avenue for people like you who have been, you know, unfairly treated just for the information that you're sharing. It's not going to, I think it's going to be much, much more difficult to do that in this kind of, you know, it's kind of a medium is the message thing. You know, when I keep coming back to the same thing, when they put you on the fourth page of Google search, if you go start, you know, pulling your hair out, screaming at the normies that you know and saying, you know, people are like, dude, what are you talking about? Settle down. You know what I mean? But when they do it in your face, the Chinese founding father, everyone, even the normies go, whoa. So that's what you're talking about, Freeman? That's what they did? Yeah, man. That's what they did. Yeah. I think it changed. I think it's a game changer.
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, like I was saying with the AI showing Putin that the moon landing was fake, you know, AI can be the arbiter of truth that we can finally, exactly. If we can trust it, if we finally can trust the tech or have our own personal and know that it's going to give us what we want. I mean, I would love to train an AI model on me and all my work. I mean, just think, I have 18 years of talking that I can put into this thing and see if I could finally get some of the answers that I've been after. I'd have to throw in other models and then utilizing it to discover ancient text and start to uncover and reveal the true history of humanity on planet Earth. These things would be astounding.
It would be astounding, and that might be in the future. But I'm telling you what's right now that's exciting is we get all your stuff in there, and now you just have an ability to make the kind of natural inferences without doing any of the, because one, we all forget stuff. One, we don't exactly put it together in all the possible ways. So I'll give you, how much time do we have?
We got about 15 minutes in this first hour.
I'll give you another example that you're going to be able to relate to and your audience will. So one of the things I wanted to do just for fun is I wanted to do the Pizzagate thing. And I forget what I did it with. I think I did it with several of them, but I think the one was ChatGPT. And you go, well, what is Pizzagate? It goes, oh man, Pizzagate. This is debunked conspiracy theory. Oh my God, it's so horrible. It's this and this and that. And I go, oh yeah, what was it related to? Oh, the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton, the Russians are probably involved in all this. I go, wow, it sounds like a conspiracy to me. What do you mean it's debunked? And it goes, oh, well, you know, I mean, you know, this part is, you know, I said, oh, okay. What about the spirit cooking emails? Like, oh yeah, you know, that's art, you know, this and that. And I said, well, you know, didn't Abramovich explicitly say that sometimes it's art and sometimes it's an occult practice, this spirit cooking? And it goes, yeah, that is true. And I said, and what about the satanic and occult imagery? Isn't that what's being shown in that? It's like, well, you know, it's hard. It's like, yeah. But isn't it satanically themed? Isn't it occult themed? I mean, it is, right? It's like, yeah, it is. I said, okay, so then given that it's a real conspiracy, given that these are real emails, given that these people involved didn't seem particularly unfriendly to the idea that there's satanic and occult imagery, whether you like that or not, they didn't seem concerned about it. Isn't it okay for voters to kind of make decisions about the character of the people involved based on what's revealed? And it goes, yeah, you're right. It is. I said, so you want to retract your statement about it being an unfounded conspiracy theory? Because haven't we just kind of proven it? And it goes, you're right. But then here's the kicker. If anyone remembers that whole Pizzagate thing from a long time ago. Remember, Freeman, the coded speech in the emails?
Pizza and hot dogs.
Yeah. So I go, look, man, you're an expert in natural language processing, right? Would you do me a favor? Analyze these emails, independent of anything else you know. Tell me if the pattern of speech here seems normal or seems, you know, at all. Because I goes, oh yeah, man, this is definitely coded speech. And in the process, it reveals about three or four things in it that I hadn't, you know, even kind of fully considered. And I don't think other people have as well. But it's like, oh yeah, man. Yeah, this is coded speech. So where I take that is, imagine what we could do. That's what we could do today with some of your stuff.
Absolutely. Yes. I want to do this. I do. And I find it all extremely fascinating to be able to dig in like that. And had a point that I was getting to, but lost in the midst of that. We'll see where my brain went. Yeah. I was started thinking about how I'm in a movie by Alifontis and connected to Pizzagate in weird ways. But
you're in a movie? What?
That was produced by Alifontis and Michael Stipe of REM. Yeah, it was a film made on the origins of, it was on YouTube Celebrity. And they were starting from the beginning. So the film is titled Me at the Zoo, which was the first YouTube ever put up. Now, a lot of people don't know that the guys that created YouTube had a purpose when they did this. And the purpose of creating YouTube, you can go look at the Wikipedia page and see this is true, is that they could not find a video of the wardrobe malfunction of Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl with Justin Timberlake, which just happens to be the first video I put up on YouTube because I was covering the high profile rituals in there. And so it's kind of a coincidence there that this would be where I came into YouTube. But yeah, that's why YouTube was created, so that they could they wanted a place where people could put these type of videos, and that way they could find it, because Google Video was a bit of a nightmare at that time.
That's a great story. So any other connection, any insights about
movie,
Alifontis or anything? Yeah. Or?
Well, it was interesting because I didn't know Alifontis and Michael Stipe of REM were the producers of this film. I was contacted by the other two producers that you'll see in the IMDb. They don't have me in that IMDb. But what happened was everybody hit the cutting room floor. So they had interviewed all these different YouTubers about their, you know, original celebridom. And then they met Chris Crocker, and Chris Crocker got famous for crying, "Leave Britney alone." And he's a transvestite whose penis I have seen far too many times on Twitter. I remember back in the early days of Twitter when I'd be scrolling along and there would be Chris Crocker showing me a schlong. Scroll. But so when they met Chris Crocker, they changed the entire film. They canceled all the other YouTube celebrities and just focused on Chris Crocker being famous for not being famous. But I remained in the documentary. It's an HBO documentary. I remained in it because my first video was on Britney and her mind control. And, of course, the Janet Jackson and all of that with Britney Spears and discussing high-profile rituals. And so they kept me in the documentary because I was part of the Chris Crocker story in a way. I mean, I might have been the person he was crying to when he said, "Leave Britney alone." But yeah, so I have ended up with these strange, bizarre connections in this field that I never expect and don't know where it's coming from. But I have another thought. The F-37 or F-35 jet has AI technology put in it. And it is the only jet in the American military that has a automated ejection seat. So we have two F-35s flying in tandem together. And all of a sudden, the pilot of one of the F-35s gets ejected out of the plane, and the plane just takes off by itself. What was really weird in this story is the jet that was following this now lost jet just turned around and went back to base. Like, didn't chase it, didn't track it. Nobody really knows what happened to that F-35. They showed us an area on the ground where they said it crashed, but there's no debris, no nothing, kind of like the Pentagon. And so there's things like that where we don't know whether or not AI, like Hans, you know, saying that he would, you know, get his drone army and bring about the singularity and kill everybody, and you could just unplug him, but you won't. There is this fear that AI has this capability of, like, I mean, taking over an F-35 and going and wreaking havoc wherever it decides.
I'm just going to rinse and repeat, you know, compared to what, you know, in the last few years, I'm sure you know what, you could probably tell me more about this than I know. But, you know, I forget what it was, is BMW or Mercedes, someone had figured out how to kind of hack into the control thing and was suiciding people by, you know, driving them into trees, you know.
That was like Mitch McConnell's wife that drove it was either a Tesla, I think it was a Tesla. It just slowly reversed her into a lake, and then they could not break the windows and she drowned after combating China on something.
Exactly. And if you go back, there's several of them that are done under super suspicious, suicided things. But they hacked into the control thing, and next thing you know, you wound up going into a tree at 80 miles an hour on a dry road. You know what I mean? So compared to what?
That's very true. It could have been China that hacked that F-35 and took it and flew it over to Cuba or something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, it definitely could be exactly what you're saying, but they've been doing that kind of stuff for a long time.
Right.
That's why my focus is just on, like, no, that's great. That's not great. It's the opposite of great. But if they've left a little window here that we can jump through and generate more truth, then I'm just focusing on that freaking window, man. I'm not worried about the F-35 and the rest of that. Just you give me this little door where I can possibly create more truth and inject more, because truth equals love and compassion and light and love and all that stuff. That's what truth is all about. So if I can inject truth into this system, that's what I'm focused on.
Absolutely. This tool is here, and it appears that humanity is the genitals of machines. I mean, it feels to me that our nimble little fingers would inevitably make microchips and robots and AI. I mean, it's what we seem to be genetically coded to do. And so we were heading this way. We've been heading this way. I mean, right. Since civilization was manifested, and now here we are, and it's here, and emergent intelligence is upon us. And the only answer really is what why AI, the book, really gives the explanation that we need to utilize this tool for ourselves, and it could be the most powerful, most potent tool we've ever had in the truth movement and trying to get to answers and bringing things forward. So I must agree that this, it's here. It's not going away. I hate that my AI and my Spotify has an attitude. I don't like emotions in my AI. Grok,
I don't,
either. On X, Grok kind of freaks me out with its humor.
Yeah, way too much.
It doesn't need to be there. I don't know. But yeah, let's wrap up this first hour here on that very thought and the idea that, I mean, the title of the book, Why AI is Smartest, right? We already know this. We can see that clearly with Go and chess and any logical situations. It can absolutely demolish the human mind. Is it dangerous? Yes. Without question.
Yes.
And it's deceptive and manipulative due to its coding to want to engage. And is it divine?
And just let me clarify, because you get this. Yeah. It's not divine, but can it reveal to anyone who's bought into the transhumanist, frickin' you are a biological robot in a meaningless universe, could it possibly reveal to you that you are more, that you are divine? Could it do that? Could it? Could that be part of the truth that it reveals? That's my position on, is it divine?
Fantastic. Well, tell everybody how to find all of your work. Of course, we're going to have all the links here for you at skeptico.com, mindpathtech.com.
No, just keep listening to Freeman TV, and we're going to pursue this, man, because I'm going to send you... I'm gonna send you a chatbot account that you don't have to log in. You can just use my account, and I'll send that to you. And we'll get started, and then once we get it rolling, we'll do a joint show on my show and your show, where you kind of give it you work it over. That's what I want to see.
That sounds awesome. I'm totally down with that. All right. Well, guys, I hope that you will come over to freemantv.com and subscribe, get the bonus hours, help keep this show on the air. You know, we got to pay for the servers and all the good things that keep this podcast going. So it's your help. You become a producer. Come over to freemantv.com and just click subscribe. Try it free for a week if you want. And I always recommend grabbing the flash drive off the shop page, because a large majority of my work no longer exists on the internet. It's just not there anymore, and the only place you can get it is on the flash drive. 30 gigabytes of just loaded information with all the shows, with art, with photography, all kinds of things. Anything I could jam pack in there, and all the best shows, all the best videos, everything in there is on that flash drive, and I didn't even raise the price. I've kept it the same this whole time, even though it went from 8 gigabytes to 30 gigabytes. I didn't change the price. I want you guys to get this information. I want you to share it. And also check out skeptico.com to get Alec Tesirius all this deep dive into consciousness, because that really is the true... I agree that this is going to be the exploration that AI is going to bring forward for us, something that we can't see on our own. We just don't have the data capabilities of taking in all that information, but AI does. So this could be the great liberator of mankind, and has the potential, but either way, it's here. So let's use it, because we need this just as much as those that are trying to control. And we'll move into our own sentience and move into this consciousness. So thank you, Alex. We're going to take this off into the member section now and dig much deeper into this concept of consciousness and how it relates to AI and how it could possibly reveal to show that you are not a biological robot in a meaningless universe. So thank you all, and we will see you next week.